Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 4th of December, 2013, across the dateline here in Japan. Today we are joined from the United States by our guest Galen Michik of the 9/11 Justice Campaign, which can be found at 911justicecampaign.org. Galen, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, James. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. Well, this is your first time on the program, the first time I'm sure many of the listeners will be encountering both you and the website, so we'll probably have to introduce both. And why don't we start just by hearing a little bit about yourself and how you came to be interested in the events of 9/11 and the truth about 9/11?
Well, thank you, James. I'd be happy to share that with you and your listeners. Before I get into that, I just want to thank you for all the fine work you're doing. I've known about you for years and you're a voice of truth and reason out there. So I just want to acknowledge you before I get started on my background.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So I have degrees in physics, math from the University of Michigan. I have an MBA from University of Michigan. I worked for Hewlett-Packard for 19 years in marketing, sales development, and account management. I retired at the ripe young age of 44 in 1999 to pursue social activism, which has been a passion of mine for my entire life. Just so you know where I'm coming from, I'd never heard of the House of Rothschild until after 9/11. And so 9/11 was a big eye-opening experience for me, as it has been for most of the world. And so my research into 9/11 led me to conclude that it was an inside-outside job. I created a website called whodidit.org. was strictly my own research, and I designed and programmed that website. And so I have been calling for years, James, for justice in 9/11, because, you know, if you know, once you know the truth of something, and you know, when somebody says, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, I always say, well, you know, there's conspiracy theory, but there's also conspiracy fact, and let's not get the two confused. And so just because there are competing theories does not mean there is no fact, that there is no truth, that, you know, as Chomsky would say, that it's something we'll never know, it's unknowable. You know, that kind of stuff is just disinformation. And so we basically know the truth of what did and didn't happen at 9/11, and you've done a lot to promote that. And so now we have a small group of people. There's about around a dozen of us that have formed the 9/11 Justice Campaign. And the idea is, once you know the truth, then the next step after truth has to be justice. And, you know, so that's why we started the 9/11 Justice Campaign. And as a matter of fact, if you go to that site, there's an introduction to 9/11 justice, and then the second and third pages are the same as the two pages from the Who Did It site. And we're right now in the process of getting the final website designed and built, and there'll be a different look and feel. But for right now, we're using this temporary website. But people can contact us. Any comment will go to us. And if you don't want that comment published, just please type in private in the message, and I'll just use that as a direct communication to myself and the other people on the campaign. So that's, in a nutshell, what we're doing and what about.
Well, I think the idea of getting justice for 9/11 is one that will resonate with my regular listeners, because it's something that I often talk about. And it's one thing to talk about, it's another thing to get there. And I think everyone understands it's a huge, huge uphill battle. So it's interesting to see this idea taking off, and I'm glad to see more people getting into it and getting their hat in the ring. Let's talk, first of all, about suspects, because, of course, talking about justice, we need to talk about who it is that we're pointing fingers at and why we are doing so. Talk about some of the people that you have listed as the suspected 9/11 criminal co-conspirators.
James, that's a great question. When I started researching this, I went into it without an axe to grind. I went into it totally unbiased. And I pulled more all-nighters researching this than I pulled in 19 years at HP, and I pulled a lot of all-nighters at HP. But the three questions I asked and to put this list together was, what were they doing on 9/11, the moment of the 9/11 attacks? Who were they talking to? What were they doing? Then I asked another question, what became of them afterward? You know, were they promoted? What kind of actions did they take? And then the third question was, what were they doing leading up to that? And what I found as I started pulling those threads, James, is that the list of suspects is really not as large as one would think. And I came up with 103 leading criminal co-conspirators. And they include people like George Bush and Dick Cheney and the people at PNAC and on and on and on. But what I surprisingly came up with were a large number of people that are from the business community, you know, the big wigs in corporate globalism, et cetera, people you would not necessarily expect to be on this list. For instance, Warren Buffett, I found, he happened to have been, he called a CEO celebrity golf tournament that day. A lot of the celebrity CEOs that would have been at work in the World Trade Center were playing golf where? At Offutt Air Force Base, the center of STRATCOM, which is where Bush later showed up that day. You know, so when you start pulling the threads like this, there's actually a lot of nepotism, as one might expect. And the other thing I came to, James, is that there is a tremendous amount of Zionist influence in this group. A third of the people named are out Zionists, and even a large number are dual citizens in the U.S., and they hold positions, high positions in the United States government. It's illegal, my understanding, for any other country to have its citizens effectively running our country, but it's okay for Israel. So there's a strong Zionist influence, and I'm truthful enough to say that, and I'm not against Jews by any means. I'm not too happy with Zionists. And, so those are some of the people involved. And, on the 103 I named, I named some top people like Netanyahu and et cetera. But I did not know exactly who to name at the very top levels, for instance, in the House of Rothschild. But I did discover years later that one Evelyn de Rothschild, who's the current head of the House, happened to have been in New York, in Manhattan on 9/10. Flew in the previous day, took a penthouse with a clear view of the World Trade Center. So based on that later information, I would now say, well, he's on the list of people we want to talk to. So does that give you a pretty fair idea? You know, PNAC, corporate, a lot of military people. And the interesting thing I found is it seems to be more Army, Air Force, and the Navy in this case, and the Marines were the, quote, good guys. Because the entire Office of Naval Intelligence was taken out at the Pentagon. And so, again, the Navy seems to have been, on the side of the people in this, and they were taken out as a consequence of that. So does that give you a pretty fair idea of some of the people? And you can go for a complete list to 911justicecampaign.org. And if you go to Who Did It, you'll see 103 photographs and a brief bio of these people. So I would encourage all your listeners to go to this site and look at the people on the list. I think a lot of them you will be expecting to see there, but there will be maybe a few surprises.
Well, in fact, that was exactly what I was going to be suggesting people do as well, to go to the website and take a look at these 103 suspected co-conspirators. And that is a pretty wide net to be casting. I certainly wouldn't doubt for a moment that there are hundreds of people who were involved in the 9/11 plot and in some form or other and are criminally complicit in that plot. But that's a huge list of names and faces to be taking in. And I would also point people to a recent post on the site from November of this year, the case against Rudy Giuliani et al., which goes through, I think, a pretty good summation of the case against Giuliani and, in fact, the case that he quite open and shut case that he tampered with and destroyed evidence at the crime scene. To my mind, that is a very effective way of laying out the information because it's quite thorough and quite. I don't think there's a jury alive that would be able to dismiss that evidence, and perhaps more effective than a list of 103 names. But tell us a little bit about the reasoning behind the putting that particular case against Rudy Giuliani up there.
Well, James. We have to start somewhere in this. It's a big nut to chew. And the most obvious people are people like Rudy Giuliani because he committed a felony. I mean, there's nobody that's even arguing that he oversaw, along with Michael Chertoff, who's another one early on the list, who oversaw the destruction of the evidence at a crime scene. And Larry Silverstein would be another obvious insurance fraud. I mean, be you go after others. And Giuliani is an obvious one, because this guy's, you know, he's up to this in his elbows. And, you know, once we get some people whose testimony we've subpoenaed, and, you know, we can start cutting deals, so to speak, like tell us the story, and we'll maybe give you some leniency. But that's why Rudy Giuliani is a particular interest, and additional people like Michael Chertoff, who was the assistant secretary of state under Ashcroft at that time. His office was in New York, and he, along with Mukasey, personally oversaw the release of the 200 plus Israeli spies and Assad agents back to Israel with no questions asked. So, you know, those are two obvious people releasing suspects in a crime.
Well, exactly right. This is all very good, but of course the question that's going to occur to a lot of people is, well, we know the absolute complicity of the courts in all of this so far, and how they've been very much complicit in the cover-up of the crimes of 9/11. How would we expect to get around that? What is the 9/11 justice campaign's vision of how we would actually get around the courts and get to prosecuting these people?
James, thank you for that, because that is the issue. You know, I've been in this truth movement from watching the towers fall. I knew that the plane could not have knocked either of the buildings down, and certainly not Building 7, no plane hit. So I've been in this since the day it happened. And so the big question, watching people like April Gallup having her case be thrown out of court by the cousin of George Bush, and watching other cases be dismissed and on, we came upon this idea, and I believe that I say that there's a logical imperative to how we're approaching 9/11, first to 9/11 justice, but then as to how we're approaching it. And that approach is going to be to present our case to a common law. Now, that's the key word here, common law grand jury. And common law grand juries can be formed at the county level and at the state level. So it is our intention not to go to a federal jury, because as soon as you do, you have to deal with judges and district attorneys who are all registered with the bar, right? So we specifically want to avoid bar registered individuals, because their allegiance is not guaranteed to the people, but common law. So you need 27 people to form a common law grand jury. And we just need one county in the entire of 3,141 counties in the 50 states of the United States of America. We need simply one county that has 27 people willing to sit on this common law grand jury. And here's the key thing, James, and this is what our research indicates. In this case, you do not need a judge. You do not need a district attorney. You do not even need a county clerk. You present your case directly to the grand jury, and if the grand jury finds that there's sufficient evidence, which, of course, if they're unbiased, they will, then the key thing is they can issue subpoenas for testimony and for evidence. Now, the one catch in this, without one key additional person, that being a county sheriff, those subpoenas can be ignored. Okay, sorry, I'm in the lobby here, so I'm talking kind of loud. Anyway, so those subpoenas can be ignored without a county sheriff. But with a county sheriff, one is all we need again. We can issue now arrest warrants if people simply ignore the subpoenas. So does that make sense?
It does, and I think that is a path forward, or at least a potential path forward. So I am interested to see how this goes, and I'd love to be able to see this actually taking place. But of course, it does require us getting enough people within a county to get this moving and get it moving forward. Have you made any progress towards that in any particular locality in the United States? And if so, where?
Well, that's a good question. We have not really. We're early in the campaign, so our first step right now, where we're at, we're in what I would call alliance building. So I would hope, you know, that this interview would generate some additional interest, and the fact that we do have a website out there. So once we build sufficient alliances with a number of different people that are reaching a lot of people, I think we'll have a better chance of getting a county interested. But the county we're tentatively looking at for a number of reasons is Flathead, Montana. And Oath Keepers are headquartered there. Chuck Baldwin is there. These people may or may not be sympathetic to this cause. It's a county in Montana that has about 90,000 residents, I believe, something like that. So it's a little bit bigger county. But we have, you know, I have friends that are from there that say, yeah, that this kind of thing would be welcomed in Flathead, Montana. We have not approached them in any fashion. So there's nothing official, but I'll say that we're looking at this county as a potential county. And then some counties are as small as 100 people. So if we were to find a small county that we had, you know, half of the county said, yeah, we want to do this, that would be a county. And James, ideally, we would do this in more than one county. But finding a county sheriff that wants to go along with us, now that's going to be maybe even more difficult, but that the county sheriff is an elected position. So, you know, if we got a county, a small county that was behind this, we could we could reasonably expect to elect a sheriff that will go through with this.
Well, that would be the hope. And as you say, you're in the alliance building phase of this. So for people out there who go and take a look at 911justicecampaign.org and decide that they are on board with this idea and want to become involved with it, what can they do to get in touch with you and how can they move forward?
That's another good question, James. Unfortunately, we don't have the permanent email address set up. So the best way to get in touch with us is just to leave a comment on any of the pages. And that will come in to, I'll read that. And then if you want that to be private, if you don't want me to publish the comment, you know, to the site, I will not publish the comment if you want to send it to private. So just say private. This is, you know, for your eyes only. I won't publish it. But right now, that's the best way to get in touch with us is just leaving a comment on any of the four pages or the posts on the site. So my apologies, we don't have a firm email address right now, but right now the comment section of any of the pages is the best way to contact us.
All right. Well, it is an interesting idea. I hope people will at least check out the website and take a look at the list of co-conspirators or suspected co-conspirators and come to the decision for themselves whether this is a project they want to get involved with. And I think we'll leave it there for now. But Galen Michik, my hat's off to you for at least getting this ball rolling, and we'll see where it ends up from here. So thank you very much for your time today.
Well, James, my pleasure, and thank you for having me on the show. And I hope we do generate some interest from your listeners. And I would welcome you in the future as we move along to revisit this and perhaps throw some of your considerable media savvy and talent behind this program.
All right. Well, let's leave it there for now. Galen Michik, thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.